Every day there is a forgetting, and every moment there is the possibility of remembering. Remembering who you truly are, awakening to your body, to the inner world and experience of being alive. Here is where you find the beauty, the joy. Here is where you free your soma.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Free Your Soma, Stories of Somatic Awakening and How to Live from the Inside Out. Today, I have a very fun, interesting, special guest with me, Maria Stark. She's a multimedia artist. She's a facilitator of creative empowerment journeys, which we'll talk about a little bit about what that means and the different projects that she has going on. And she has a new album that's out in September as a singer, songwriter, and musician. I'm really excited to connect with you again because it's actually been 12 years or so since I talked to you in person. We saw each other, we met each other at an Ani DiFranco concert in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
At that time, we became Facebook friends, and I've been following your career ever since. And it's been really fun to watch you grow and develop and build such an incredible, you have written so many songs and you've been so prolific, and you've, you know, done so many different projects, and you've been helping all these different kinds of people connect with their voice in all these interesting ways. So yeah, what a pleasure to have you on my podcast.
It's really fun to be here, Amy. Thanks for having me. Yeah, and I'm remembering that concert. I'm guessing like Anais Mitchell was also at that show opening for Ani. That was the first time I saw Anais, who became one of my favorite songwriters of all time and biggest influences. And so it's fun to tag back to that moment, and really fun to be here and be with this question of the soma and the influence of soma on creativity and all of the things. So thank you so much for inviting me to be here.
Yes, wonderful. And you know, usually, like I said, we start with like, what's the, you know, whether it's an origin story or what's kind of your somatic journey been like, and if there was a specific time in your life that you felt like you really connected to your soma, you connected to your body, and you became aware of something in yourself. You know, that's usually what I invite people to share, like early on in the podcast. Do you have like a memory, as I say that, that's kind of showing up in your soma?
You know, it's interesting to feel this question. I think my earliest memories of having experiences of some like somatic body stuff had to do almost with connecting. I have these memories of being with the trees in my playground as a child, and being and like really connecting to their root systems and having an intuition at that time, or almost like a visualization of how they were communicating to each other under the ground, under the roots, and that I could tap into their networks of communication if I wanted to through my like resting into my body. So that's the first thing that pops off. But I also had I've had some challenges with my body, and I broke my back when I was 20, and I felt in a lot of ways disconnected from certain aspects of my body. They're, like some ways very connected because I was in theater and we had to do a lot of kind of progressive relaxation exercises in theater to get more in the body, and being on stage and just learning how to be on stage in front of other people as a young person and having that experience. So in those ways, like getting really physical, doing a lot of physical theater kinds of exercises got me really in. And maybe just even awakening to sexuality as a young, as like a teenager, those were definitely big body somatic memories come up. It's like, what's the earliest memory? I'm like, probably when Eros started coming on and like all those energies of moving inside the body and the winds and connection to someone else, those really come up. But I'd say that it really started to change for me when I started studying Qigong and energetic medicine and having real experiences of energy moving in my body in a deliberate way with working with energetic practices specifically to move, to awaken the subtle body and to become more familiar and connected and attuned to the subtle body. So it's a little bit of my journey. And then since then, I've been recovering from a broken back, doing physical therapy, learning how to feel confident in my wobbly legs. And those are some things that come to mind. But as a creator, it's been fun actually to experiment with different doors through the body of letting information come from the body forward, like you said.
Yeah. I love that about the trees, like what you started with there. I think that's very fascinating because soma isn't just a human experience. Like trees have somas, dogs and cats have somas. Like in many ways, you could even, you know, say the planet itself is a soma. It's this living, you know, living organism with this perhaps first person experience that's going on, this consciousness that's going on all the time. And so I think that's really beautiful that as a child, you know, there's such an openness that we have in our perception and awareness. It sounds like you were really able to feel into the tree's soma and how that was connected to your soma through your feet on the ground, through the air, you know, and the exchange of the atmosphere that you're both experiencing. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And the other thing you said that I wanted to comment on was that the kind of way that if you've been trained as a dancer, you know, and I recently had a dancer interview on this podcast, which was fascinating, or maybe as an actor, performer of some kind, there are these ways that we can get really acquainted with our soma from a performative place. And there's a little bit of a distinction there because we can be in a performative place, but can we also just like be in like an experiential, like non-performative place where we're not imagining ourselves in a third person, but like really fully in that first person. So I think that there's sometimes like, it's like a weaving in and out of like, can we weave those two experiences together? So we're not like one or the other, you know?
I love that. It's like the abiding practice, like how present can I be in here? And then like through presence and embodiment, feel like the fullness of my life and then give from that place. And there, yeah, it's always, it's been an interesting journey as a performer and someone who is like tapping into these deep parts and exposing them to myself and then sharing them to others. And then how does that feel for me in safe in terms of disclosure and safety? It's wild ride. It's getting more, like integrated though, the longer we go, the longer I go and contemplating and practicing. And I've been spending a lot of time in hot springs lately. That's really good for my soul. It's just like so in the body, like, now it's hot. Ooh, now it's cold. Oh, now I'm sleeping. Like it's just so body centered. It's really nice.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, like with hot springs or just putting ourselves into different environments that like shift our consciousness, because then we can really start to see how our body and our consciousness are just totally immersed and enmeshed all the time. And when we change something physically, we are also changing something energetically, which is kind of what you alluded to before with the different kinds of body-based energy movement work that you're also doing alongside your artistry. I think that's really essential, honestly, to longevity as an artist, to have those practices to support. Can you say a little bit about that, like how body practices support artistry?
Yeah, well, I mean, I from what I understand in my own process and the little bit of cognitive, like, or science of the brain and how it works, it's that there's this, like, frontal cortex, open orientation, flow state, connecting to these, like, states of wonder and openness. And if I'm in my body having, like, a series of accumulated tensions without moving that for long periods of time, that can start to, create a crunchiness in how I'm thinking, and like I'm not thinking straight, or I'm not in that flow state. And so just changing the body, moving the energy, moving the winds can help to lubricate the process, and then I get into states of mind that are more conducive to creative process.
Yeah, and I think everybody has different, like, you know, probably based on how their brains are, you know, more inclined to work. But like, for example, one creative process that I worked with a vocal coach like 2 years ago, which was my first time ever working with a vocal coach, and I loved it. It was amazing.
Nice.
And she was really big on morning pages.
Nice.
Right. But she also had us doing like physical movements before we would sing. She would have us doing kind of these big kind of somatic kind of movements to open things up in our bodies before we sing. Because there's kind of all these different pathways into our creative flow, to that creative energy. And the, you know, the morning pages can seem like it's this just writing practice, like a writing thing, And I do think that it helps with, like, you know, if you're a writer, obviously it'd be a really great tool, but it's a great tool for creativity in general, because it's just kind of about getting whatever's inside out, mm-hmm. so that there's that flow between what's happening internally and what you're able to share and express and create.
Totally. Like getting in the practice of putting the stream, the, like, yeah, making the connection. I mean, I love morning pages. I go through processes of doing them more proactively. And it's always really helpful, especially, I mean, I like typing stuff out. It's a different process to type it out than actually doing, like, pen to paper and having the, like, wood of the paper itself drawing out. Like in Chinese medicine, they say, like, the wood of a pencil and the wood of the paper actually helps draw the energy out of the liver, which I think is a cool framework for thinking about really, like, moving stagnation and also having that creative energy, like the wood elements, like creation, new energy, life, imagination, generosity. It's always like moving out. And that's, if I can get into that flow with the pen in my hand, a pencil in my hand on the paper, then it creates a portal for that the ephemeral world to have a place to come all the way through, which is another really cool part of somatic practice for me, from what I can tell in terms of creative vessel work, of like, okay, I'm tending a vessel through which I'm birthing unseen realities in through my lens and effort. And then if I'm in a process, like, what is the actual bridge that gets built? Well, it's the bridge of, you know, deliberate, dedicated attention. And what am I doing with my body with these tools? And so, yeah, morning pages is definitely essential for me in priming the pipe.
Cool. I love that. I didn't know that about the wood. I had periods of time where I, like, only exclusively wrote in, like, journals and didn't type. And then more and more, you know, I become inundated to, like, the phone, and I end up using, like, my little notes, you know, and it's a totally different thing. Would it be the element of metal? Would that be kind of, like, what you're using when you're...
It's interesting. Yeah. And it's an interesting thing. I mean, you could probably consider it as, like, a metal element or, like, kind of this, like, other thing. It's still, like, it, and with the tools, you know, it's like I'm at this place with my creative process where it's just like, use whatever tools you got to keep it moving. But there is something unique, like it does change for me with, like, the typing. It has a different exchange than when I'm, like, writing the words itself. There's something about the, like, writing it in the body and the soma that does something magical. It opens up different pathways, but there's something cool to the, I love this idea of, like, what element is the, is it the metal? It's a mineral element. It's like an alternate elemental process. I almost think of it as, like, kind of an ether element.
That's what I'm typing. Too, like, yeah, ether, wind, or, like, kind of like a more, like mercurial kind of. Yeah. I mean, it definitely has, like, a mercury energy, like, and it's about communication, but I almost feel like it's, like, double edged or something when it's typed out. You know, there can be, like, a real sharpness to it. Whereas, like you said, when you're, like, writing, I feel like there's a softer edge to my language, or maybe I'll be a little bit more flowy or poetic and, like, maybe slightly more clinical when I'm typing. I don't know.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought experiment, you know, and it's an interesting kind of creative experiment for our listeners, like to spend a week only writing and writing with your journal, and then spend another week only writing on, like, a typed page and just feel into the difference. What was created in each of the place? What were the gifts and limitations of each method? And, you know, right. This creative process, like, there, everything has its gifts and everything has its limitations, and you can benefit from all of the tools in the toolbox. I mean, I'm never going to stop using my computer to type out songs and do refinements of song process, in that it's so useful. And I can get, like, clinical, and maybe certain songs want to be clinical, you know.
Like, there's wisdom there too, in our clinicism.
Yeah, like whatever it takes to get it out. But I have noticed that I don't write as many songs in my journals, and I miss that. I want to bring it back. I think there's something in the alchemy that is unique to that method.
Right. I could almost, like, even imagine just, you know, taking it really bare bones, like, back to the earth, and you, like, camp out for a couple of days and you don't have any electronics, and all you have is, like, a guitar and a drum or something, you know, and then pieces of paper to get real, like, tone it way back and then just feel what that's like. And then, you know, of course I love electronic music and I love all the cool stuff we can do with technology. You know, it's just, they're just different animals.
They're different animals. And I think it's like, you know, I also, again, I trust the creative process and the evolution of the creative process. And I like going, I like placing specific limitations on creative process. I think that that can be really useful. But I also, yeah, I also am, I'm grateful for being able to catch any winds of inspiration at any moment on my phone without having, if I don't, you know, it's like, great, thank you. You know, so there's plenty of things that wouldn't have been created effectively had I not had that tool as well.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to talk with you a little bit more about voice activation, because that's part of what I experienced when I worked with this vocal coach. Was I'd always loved to sing. It had always been a thing that I loved to do, but I never felt like I could control my voice very well. And her, like, she had this whole process she took us through with like bringing the sound into different parts of our face. And like, I don't know, like there's probably a whole bunch of different techniques out there, but this was really kind of profound for me because she had us move our voice like up into our nasal area and sing from here, which she called like our mixed voice or something like this. And then our head voice was where we could kind of feel the vibration coming out the top of our head. Right. And then our chest voice, which was where like I was more comfortable singing most of my life, was like down here and you could feel the vibration in your chest. And then when she started teaching us how to move it, even over the course of like a single note or like a song, that you could really move the vibration in your voice, right? But what I felt happened during that, like it was an 8-week program that I took with her, as I felt that like there was this sudden deeper connection between like how it showed up for me, how it manifested was like what I want to do for like money in my life and what my creative like spiritual path is. Like those things like converged for me. And I felt like they were finally finding like full expression during that time. Which was really, really rad. And I mean, I told her and I was like, I'm going to leave you a badass testimonial because this was amazing, you know, but I know it was a reflection of like where I was at that time, but I know voice activation can show up really differently for every person, right? For every soma. But I would love to hear a little bit about like, you know, how you kind of think of voice activation and what are some of the things that start shifting for people when they start to move their energy in this specific way, in this way of vocalizing.
Well, I like to think of the body as primed for making sound, you know, where we do it and anything that we do without kind of organically, when we bring extra attention to it, it becomes this whole other way of engaging with our reality. So just even breathing, we breathe kind of non, like it's, we don't think about it. It's happening spontaneously, it's happening as part of our life. We don't really think about what we talk, although there's like some will involved. We like can choose to do it or not, you know, but we're like, we're just talking, we're not thinking about it. We're making sound, we drop something, we're like, you know, it's reactive, it's reflexive. And but when we bring extra attention to our breath, you know, we take that slowing down, all of a sudden, whoa, our whole state can start to change. And same with bringing our extra attention to making sound. Oh, wow. All of our state starts to bring this like, oh, what is the vibration? Oh, how am I sharing something that's inside of me? Now I'm bridging it out through sound and breath and meaning and the shape of my mouth and the shape that my body's, the posture I'm taking as I express it, my facial expression. There's like so many things that we've set that for me, I become aware of and attuned to in terms of my relationship with the reality I'm creating, and the relationship I'm having with the person who's on the other side of my communication, or the relationship I'm having with myself and divinity, with how much sound I'm just willing to let move through my body in a moment. And that can be very, very confronting for, at least for me, in ways that I have made myself small, self-silenced, contorted my posture in order to be safe, contorted my like sound in order to be palatable. There's all of these constructs all of a sudden that become lit up just in bringing the awareness of my deliberate attention and deliberate action to what sound am I making? Where is it coming from in my body? Where is it coming from in my preparation? What's my intention? What's the sensation like? What am I imagining as it's happening? What am I wanting as it's happening? All of these things that suddenly, like, then this spatial awareness starts to pop out. Like, oh, wow, I'm having like a whole spherical embodied experience of my, of congruence of my mind stream, my voice, my body, my breath, my instrument, my relationship to all that is, my collaboration with the divine. And like all of that for me is really lit up in somatic practice with the voice. Voice as a vehicle for transformation, for evolution of the soul, for evolution of our identity, for growing up, for unfolding our gifts in the world. And it's very vulnerable. And it's connected to so much emotion, because once we start moving sound into the body, especially if there have been habits of closure, habits of collapse, subtly unknown to us, maybe intuited, but we can't find, like, quite find it there. We start inviting sound and breath into our body. All of that shit starts to really reveal exactly where it is, like big pockets of emotions, memories, traumatic experiences of not being received in our vulnerable sharing of our sound, the time when it was too much or we couldn't control it and we were embarrassed. All this stuff happens. It starts to swirl around. And I know for myself, when I'm in a cycle of actively moving through any kind of threshold of expansion, and I'm letting my voice be a vehicle through which I'm interacting with that threshold and assimilating the energies come up, lots of big pockets of emotions will come up, like as if they're just bubbling up from my organs, as if my organs are like holding on for dear life to these tensions, and just the sound itself is vibrating and they're all just like, blah, 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 I can't hold on, and it comes up to say goodbye, and it's just like, oh my gosh, all these bubbles from the subterranean realms of my psyche, it's like, oh, holy shit. And it's so somatically unfolding, can release so much. That has story, that doesn't have story, that just feels chronic untended grief pockets will bubble up with sound like that. And I think that that's why it's one of my favorite practices, because it doesn't have to have meaning for it to be useful. Like, I don't have to have some idea of what happened for me to have an impact, like for it to have an impact on my life of feeling more flow. That stuff can happen, but it doesn't have to. It's just, it feels like the body, from my perspective, it needs to discharge energy. And culturally, we live in a way where we're kind of conditioned to not discharge the energies, to hold it all in, to endure, to kind of collapse. And so any opportunity, I think, for a body vessel to have an experience to discharge energy, it can be completely just change your whole state, can change your whole self-concept, it can release tensions that have been backlogged for months or years or decades. And then all of this new energy is available, the winds move more. And in like my yogic practices, some of the concepts is that the body just wants to sing when the winds are flowing well. But if we have any kind of like grasping or aversion or like collapsing in any way to settle like tensions, then that these winds get choked off, and then the winds aren't like, the singing voice has more obstacles. And so anytime we like, okay, rest into abiding, breathing, letting the sound move, then the winds of the body flow more as they're meant to. And there, that can just, I think, create a little bit more homeostasis in the body, more peace, more relaxation, more creative thought, more relaxed dreaming, and at the very least, it can be just pleasurable to feel the sound moving through your body. You're just like, oh, holy shit, I'm an instrument. I make sounds.
Yeah.
This is super trippy.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, one of the first times that I felt like kind of those obstacles in my voice that you're talking about, like really connected with that, mm-hmm. was actually when I was in India. And it's funny because it's like my first podcast episode is actually about this somatic experience in India. Well, nice. Part of it took place in India, but like I was in this class, and I had never been in a class like this where they actually asked us to vocalize in class. and they had us do Brahma Mari, which is the honeybee breath, where you press your tongue against the roof of your mouth and you go, and you make this humming sound like a bee. It creates this vibration in your head. And they had us doing that in different yoga positions to feel how that vibration started, you know, in our nasal kind of head area. But then depending if you were like in child's pose or if you were in a back bend or wherever you were positioned, how it vibrated a little bit differently down into different areas of your body. But I was like not fully picking up on all of that back then. I was just sort of like overcome with this idea that I was like going to make noise and other people were going to hear me in like a yoga class. And I remember the first couple times I did it, I was horrified because I was like, I sound so pained. There was so much pain that I heard in my expression. It did not sound free. It sounded like kind of like choked, and it sounded like a groan, somewhere between like a groan and a moan, you know, that was, there was this pain that I had been holding in my body, you know, and at this time I was living in chronic pain. And so it was like really kind of intense to hear that, to like hear myself and those obstacles, like you said, those contractions and those beliefs and that patterning that was in the way of like my voice ringing through. And that was, you know, kind of years later in this voice activation course that I took, like, I kind of felt like at this point I had done a lot of somatic work and there were less obstacles in the way. So like when those obstacles kind of appeared, like in the tone of my voice, when I was like making a sound and there was like these little shaky spaces or, you know, it wasn't quite a clear tone and all this stuff, it was like more manageable. Like I was able to like relax and like hear that, and it didn't sound as upsetting to me as it did back then, which is kind of is telling about like how many obstacles I kind of had in my body at that time versus now when I tried it and there were still these little obstacles, but they were just like little wrinkles that kind of got like smoothed out, like the more that I practiced, you know?
Yeah. And it's like, it's funny when you kind of contemplate, I like contemplate it all kind of mythically, holographically, like what's happening on a kind of somatic level, on a like gross level, what's happening on a subtle level, what's happening on a causal level, how does it actually change the kinds of thoughts we have, the parts of our character that we have more access to, the kinds, the like places in our story that are more lit up at any moment, and how does that, and then moving from those places, transform the kinds of conversations then we're involved in, or the kinds of people that we are drawn to interact with, and then what bubbles up in those interactions based on the kinds of things we're sharing, because something else, like it, like all kinds of realities can change in that way. Like the dream totally, it's almost like a total valence shift into it. That's why I think people who get into like a thinking, oh, you can do work with the voice to change, you know, like on a kind of funny level, you can go to different dimensions, your whole reality can change. And it's like, oh, that sounds interesting. But like, let's think about that. Like, what, why would a reality change? Like, what would, what's involved in your, in being in a different paradigm of, and a different valence of your lived experience, based on, again, what's opening and what kinds of things are arising naturally as a result of how you feel in your body, like all of it. And when I started really playing with the voice from a somatic place, like I've been a singer my whole life, but when I really started considering it as like a vehicle for transformation, for consciousness, spelunking, soul spelunking, exploration of my mind, exploration of my imagination, exploration of my relationship to the divine and to how I was observing reality, it really changed a lot, because different things were perceivable to me through the lens of exploring my own vessel with this extra attention in my soma, and then other things just lit up on the game board. Like other people's fields look differently, that I was tuned into different things that people were saying, I was tuned into tones of conversations differently, I wanted different things out of my experiences, you know, and that really shifted how much of myself I was willing to bring to the table, how much of myself I was willing to disclose in relationship to having more clarity about what I wanted.
Right. Because it's like a little bit more of that, like, discernment developed, or awareness of like how, like, at any given moment we are dancing with our environment, and part of that dance is whatever we're expressing. And we're expressing, obviously, with facial expressions, with our movement, with our body language, but that is also tied in with our voice.
Yeah.
It's tied in with our tone. Like you said, just the vibration of somebody speaking is going to give you a lot of information about where they're at, and where they're at in relation to the thing or the concept or the person that they are, you know, connecting with.
Yeah.
It's all this sort of, as you said, like holographic interconnected thing. And I can totally imagine that it would shift your timeline to go, like, for me, from thinking, you know, I had this identity back then in 2015 as like, oh, I'm a yoga teacher and I'm good at public speaking and da 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 da. And then I'm in this yoga class, I'm asked to vocalize, and I'm like, my whole paradigm started to shift, because I'm like, why do I sound so miserable and so scared? That's not the self that I, like, outwardly identify with, but that's what I'm holding. That's what's inside right now, you know? And so it kind of did. It was part of a paradigm shift that was already going on a bunch of different levels, you know? And I think that it can work, you know, that's kind of like a way where I'm like seeing into, you know, seeing into some dark closets where there's some stuff hanging out there I didn't know was there, right? But it could work the other way too, where it kind of opens you up to this expansiveness of what's possible, right? All the different timelines that are possible for our consciousness to be tuned into, and that through engaging and interacting and playing with our voice, we can start to, as you kind of said, like, open these different portals to different kinds of experience that's all available now. It's all available right now. It's about whether we're having access to it. And I can totally see how the playing with your voice and the dancing with it would start to stimulate these different possibilities in your environment. That makes sense to me personally.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, think this other thing you're sharing about is just like, oh, I have this whole identity concept, and then I'm like exposing myself in these other parts that I maybe are more embarrassing, or they're not congruent with who I think I am. And then it's like, wow, I really get to engage with these parts of me that are not me, or these parts of me that are inherited, or these parts of me that I've dissociated from, or I don't want to be associated with, because that it's not okay to be that. And like the acceptance of like, oh, maybe I'm this also, you know, or maybe I'm confident and insecure. Maybe I'm both. And like, what is it like to have a vessel that can be be available for those things, and have the sound be ugly and be like, cool, you know, like, but like, just like have no distance from that experience of like, this also gets to be part of my lived experience and part of my, like, an integrated whole person. Now I can play with that sound and like edge a little further, and we can always go back to sounding insecure, and we can also get stronger, and then we can like play back at insecure, and we can like have the range. And I think exploring voice as a way to increase our range of sensation and our range of what parts of ourselves that we're willing to become familiar with, and be in relationship with, and have tending with and hold, and is super powerful. And for me has been very integrative and healing, because I have gotten to encounter parts of me that, even as like a strong singer, I was just like, oh, there's like this whole kind of cathedral of my like reality that I haven't entered into with my sound. How very interesting. Like, what would it be like to open up that vault? And there's all new vaults. There's new vaults opening all the time. And I think that's the another fun thing in terms of, yeah, sound as an ally. Because I think these explorations can be done through many methods, and, you know, it's like just the unfolding of like, what can we be aware of? How can our imagination create these like vault, you know, palaces of the dream of being? But sound is such a great ally and vehicle for having like a friend or like to go through into those places with, or having a boat, so like traveling on the sound, and when the boat gets rocky, it's like, ooh, like these muscle, the body's kind of shaking and relax, you know, it's opening up new for more energy to come online. And yeah, it's really cool, and it's always changing. I mean, I think the sound journey, the journey for me of like where am I allowing the sound to take me in terms of my experiences, it's endless. It keeps opening new exciting experiential doors, and it feels like one of those, like if I had to have a religion or like a wholeheartedly commit to a certain paradigm of spirituality, it would 100% involve this voice on some level, or like as this vehicle of prayer and devotion to touching the ineffable, because of how endless it has been in my experience to continue to open new layers of that, yeah, that mirror, that reflection, that joy, that relationship with the sweetness. And it is so, yeah, emotional. Like it's like so full bodied. It's such a immersive experience with the creative aliveness of the universe. And that sounds a little like, you know, poetic word salad-y, but I'm 100% committed to it. Like I'm wholehearted about it. You know, it's not some fantasia of words I'm stringing together. Like I feel it so like innocently that there is this cosmic song that we're part of, and that when we're singing and we're moving sound through our voice, we're saying yes to being a part of it. And it's very alive. And when we're very alive, we can encounter the parts of us that have not been safe to feel alive, or that felt like, oh, I can't be part of that, you know. So it all comes forward.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely like felt like recently with the, you know, not necessarily. Well, it was kind of like there were parts of me that were in the closet or like hiding or like under the bed, and then they came to the surface, right? Mm-hmm. Like 2015, and then more recently, it was like things that were dormant, energies that I didn't have access to suddenly got connected to like the larger framework of like my body and myself. And I was like, oh, you know, this is moving now. This is exciting. Like now I feel that there's an actual way to express, you know, my individual creativity, my individual message, my voice, you know, my thoughts and feelings are more accessible because I've connected at these channels to like move it out, right. You know, and so many spiritual and religious practices around the world all have singing, you know, the call to prayer, or like, you know, different vocalizations that people do, right? Whether it's chanting, you know, or hymns, or, you know, all kinds of vocalizations that are about what you're talking about connecting us to the divine. And I feel like there's so many, such different language that people can use to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not super versed on it, but I do know that, you know, when we hum, when we sing, when we chant, it's connecting us to our vagus nerves, stimulating all of that, like down into our bodies and helping our nervous systems to regulate,
right?
And to release stress, right? Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason, obviously there's a lot more to it. The reason that, you know, some of the first thing that we do once we're born is we scream and we make noise in our little tiny bodies. You know, and we're waking up our nervous system to respond to the life around us and to ask for help and to get our needs met and all of those things that we're doing. You know, sound is so incredibly innate to us as human beings. And, you know, as an explorer of that, what I found really interesting about like how watching your career develop is like, not only is it just beautiful and exciting and fun to see what you're up to and the different collaborations that you have, but how you really have created not only like obviously your internal relationship with sound and with music, but you create relationships in your life with other collaborators. And then now you're starting to share and talk about, you know, intimacy and the way that being expressed and being connected to your voice can improve your intimate relationships. Would you say a little bit about that?
Yeah. Disclosure. Disclosure and willingness to be, I mean, first and foremost, just in touch with having a literacy of our own emotions and our needs and our values, and then the courage to feel willing to disclose that to another and create a field of energy that or like that can contain disclosure. And I mean, I'm very passionate about compassionate communication and relationship studies. I know how painful it can be when it doesn't go well and how much loss can come from not having coherent and ways to share in and world build and have create shared reality and shared understanding and disclose the vulnerable truths of having bodies and minds that put stories together that may or may not be based in truth, but needing to share them with someone else in order to not be alone in that and find pathways together, if we can, for harmony and for continued relation. And so I would say that working with sound as a method of meditation and embodiment has absolutely supported me in deepening in my relationships because I feel more connected to what my body wants and doesn't want at any moment. Whereas maybe in other times of my life, I was overriding that more often in order to stay, like, create a false sense of security and safety with people. But then there wasn't full disclosure on my side, not because I was hiding as much as I wasn't in contact necessarily with the truth of what my body was overriding and where I was self-abandoning in order to maintain kind of like a sense of homeostasis. And I think that we do that, and I think that it's part of like a culture of codependency and enmeshment and like working out family dynamics, and those are things I'm studying and curious about. Maybe it's not all of that, but I think there's a natural desire for many of us, at least for me, to like make sure everyone's okay and happy. And I think to be the one to the be willing to be a voice to disrupt the status quo and to challenge what has become a symbiotic or stagnant dynamic between people can be very scary. And I think that singing and toning has created a sense of increased safety in my own body, regardless of what the outcome is of disclosing vulnerable experiences, while at the same time, in partnership, having collaborative methods of sharing the voice, like knowing that there's gonna, for me, is essential, like knowing that we have a way to create a container around what gets said and what unfolds, knowing it's not gonna be perfect or it's gonna land weird, maybe, or we're gonna have emotions, like creating as much of a blanket of safety around that, I think is optimal for having the best possible outcome if the outcome desired is to sustain healthy relationship. If the outcome desired is just to share whatever is on your heart and have it be heard, then that doesn't matter. But I think for me, I still cherish, like, I desire for the relationship field to be tended and still have disclosure within that tells the truth so that there is a maintained sense of integrity within the room. And I think all of that takes time to discover. It's not automatic. We don't come up knowing this stuff. I think it's part of the unfolding of these bodies. And again, like coming back to the soma, like there's so much information. Like for me, for a lot of people, if you're someone who grew up depressed or you had different things, like you might have a kind of a frozen like nervous system state that kind of goes into this like dorsal. You might not feel everything that's true for yourself, and that certainly has been the case for me. And I've been learning, like, oh, how do I feel more of what's alive in my body and make space for these feelings and not immediately project them all on the person that's stimulating these sensations in my body, but also include them in my experience so I don't have to, push them away or alone or bring weird energy into the interaction. It's like it's so vulnerable. And yeah, with collaboration, all of that is really the playground for exploring that. And hopefully you have partners in the gym of all of that who are compassionate towards the human unfolding of that we're learning this together. One of my teachers, mentors, she talks about like, we're all humaning, we're all unpacking these dynamics together, slowly thawing generations of self-silencing and self-abandonment for the sake of maintaining, like surviving within the cultural status. And like that, you know, where every new generation has an opportunity to unpack some of the outdated survival patterns and grow into greater self-trust, and then greater collaborative, like collaboration. Like I feel like the more I trust myself, the deeper my collaborations can be, because I'm bringing someone who's very trustable to the container. And voice has been an absolute anchor in helping me develop that over time.
Yeah. When you were saying before about the culture of codependence and like the way that we will, you know, self-abandon unconsciously a lot of times, like you said, we don't even have access to what we're really feeling, and we're just gonna go along with placate or do whatever, you know, is the first in the first layer of like our consciousness and our abilities, whatever the first programming is that says like, this is what you do in this situation, a reaction or whatever it is. And how that kind of is sort of an analogy for like having a bias towards like harmony, or thinking that there's only like a certain way to sing that sounds good. Mm-hmm. And what I hear you unpacking a lot in your languaging is that we can like actually be more neutral than that about sound, for example. Mm-hmm. We can recognize that like, while, you know, there may be like a certain body response that we have when we hear a harmony, and there may be a certain body response we have when we hear dissonance, it doesn't mean that dissonance is wrong. And it doesn't mean that dissonance doesn't have a place and a function in the world of sound, right? Even over like the course of a song or something like that, there could be an absolute perfect place for this dissonance to live for a moment and be for a moment. And the way I think about it too is kind of with this, you know, these ways that we're like, I don't know, turning away from sometimes, like, oh, I don't want to sound bad, I don't want to sound like dissonance, I don't want to have this miscommunication happening, this argument, right, in my relationship. You know, how do I, you know, because I'm a Libra moon, we're going to get like astrological with it. So I'm always like, oh, harmony at all costs. And it becomes this like tyrant of like, no, actually the fight is good. The, you know, you don't want to stay ugly. You don't want to stay dissonant the entire time. You know, maybe we do sometimes, but like you want to get back to maybe that place of harmony, you know, but that dissonance is going to actually like show you what harmony is. It's going to actually be the pathway back to that. You would have no idea, you know, that this song that you're singing is outdated, or that it's no longer like quite relevant to this situation, if you didn't have some kind of break where somebody was, like you said, disruptive or off key, and then we need to start over and find how our voices mesh together now, because things are maybe different than they were a couple of generations ago, right? They're different now. They're different in this relationship than they were in my last relationship, or in this moment than they were 3 weeks ago when we were having the same conversation. You know, and those are the places with singing and communication that I feel like it is a practice. It's an ongoing practice that's never really finished. You know, like even in a long-term relationship with somebody, whether it's like a lover or, you know, a family member or something, like there may be issues in the relationship that you talk about over and over and over. That same situation, that same story comes up again for review. And you have the same or slightly different variations of feelings come up about that topic. But if you work with that creatively, like, and, you know, I'm speaking from like kind of an experience in my marriage of like us working through these things creatively over time, things that would have normally, you know, if we kind of just imagined like someone telling us about like a situation, be like, oh yeah, that's a deal breaker. That would have just destroyed your relationship. You know, that doesn't sound good in a song, whatever the judgment is. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, but actually when we work with it creatively, and each time we're like practicing, something new shows up and we like recognize that it's a little bit different than the last time. You know, it's getting a little bit, the harmony is getting a little bit clearer. It's getting a little bit tighter. Oh, there was dissonant again. And how does that work or not work with this, you know, thing that we're practicing, with this thing that we're moving through? What I've seen is that it's part of the evolution, like, of the relationship over time, to repeat those same stories until they actually sound very different than whatever they sounded like when we first started talking about it, whenever it first happened, right? Because the layers of our experience in communication are growing, right? And I mean, obviously that's like, you know, this is like coming from a growth mindset versus, you know, what you mentioned, which was like, you know, sometimes we just want to say our truth and like speak our peace. And like, we don't really care if it just blows everything up, right? But there's another way to do it too, where it's a collaboration over time that's building something, that's building a better communication model, that's building like a lifelong relationship that is bountiful, you know? And again, not to say that burning it all to the ground isn't appropriate sometimes. There's probably plenty of situations in my life where that was the right thing to do.
And occasionally, you know, there's a reason buildings burn to the ground. Like, because sometimes they gotta, you know? It's funny.
Yeah. But I do. I love this kind of like metaphor of like removing the judgment of it, you know, should be this way. We should sound this way. And seeing what opens up in our communication, in our relationship, when we're just connecting more to that like authenticity of expression, you know, at what is the word you use that was great for it? Like the disclosure, like fully disclosure, full disclosure. But as you said, like we can't even really do that until we have the knowing within ourselves, until we access it ourselves. How can we even tell someone else until we know it, right? And I don't think that there's even a linear timeline on that. I feel like sometimes like, as I'm expressing myself, I'm like hearing myself. I'm going, oh, that's how I feel, apparently.
Right. And then it's like, well, what is that? How I, and then it's always changing too. You might say it all out loud and then feel really differently about it as soon as you say it. And that's, again, I think the like purge, the purgative, like the power of sound to help us purge things in our system. It's like, oh, I just need to say it like this right now. And then it like goes away. You're like, oh, that was interesting. I don't feel that way.
Yeah, I changed my mind. I changed my heart. I don't feel that way anymore. I think that was a really wonderful lesson to, you know, I have like a 5-year-old son. And so it kind of like, he changes so much, but then I can see like him starting to like, hold on to like, no, if I felt this way, I should keep feeling this way. And in a way I see that like in him, I see that in myself, like the stubbornness of like, you know, holding on to a feeling because why? Like, why is it that I'm so ready to harbor that experience and not just like let it flow? You know, what is that blockage or that like clinging that's there, and what's purpose did it serve at one point to like hold on to it?
Right. Like, I think, yeah, it does serve a purpose to hold on to it sometimes. I think it like can, I think about this a lot with my body when I'm like holding on to resentment. It's almost like a little like shield. Like it helps me like for a little bit. I'm like, oh, this thing I'm mad about. I'm like, yeah, look at that. Look at your little protector. Oh, they just get to hold on to this thing that they're mad about instead of like letting it go and having to like feel this whole thing. We're like, oh, I don't want to feel all of that. So I'm going to stay mad over here about this thing right here. It's going to protect me, you know?
Right. Oh yeah. No, I feel you. Cause like whenever there are those moments where like, I feel, you know, like I've been feeling resentful about something and then there's something that occurs and it drops away. Like I feel so very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I feel so very exposed or something. And so, yeah, I totally feel you on like the resentment being this useful shield that maybe sometimes I'm not ready to bring it down and feel all the feels that are there. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. This is amazing. I really think that connecting with my voice was a huge part of becoming an entrepreneur that has a podcast.
Nice.
Like, awesome. Obviously, you know, but I, you know, before like the voice activation, it was like I said, I still loved to sing. I was, you know, standing up in front of people teaching yoga. I was always using my voice, but there was like a shift when something kind of got activated at a deeper level, when you said like, I kind of connected it to like something more than just the things my voice could do, but that it was like an expression of something that was going on internally and of something larger than me, that it had like a purpose beyond just my own, you know, communication or my own like personal journey, that it could be a vehicle for connecting with everybody else, for connecting my individual journey with the journeys of other people. And I know that you have a few different ways that you teach and that you share your gifts with people. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the different kind of journeys, these creative empowerment journeys that you take people on.
Yeah, thank you for asking. Well, and I love that you've gotten to have an experience of what it was like to go on a journey with a mentor and have a dedicated container to really work on it. I have a background in music therapy, and so I love specific containers to unpack certain different processes. And I create, I have a place called Temple of the Muse, which is an online learning space for artists or people who want to explore artistically themselves more. We mostly work with the voice and songwriting as our mediums, but certainly artists of many mediums can come and take the different rides that are presented. I have a 9-month Muse devotion that begins in October for women. And this is a space for working with the voice and songwriting as a method for personal growth and for healing with the womb. And we go on a 9-month journey exploring the womb gates and the pathways of initiation that women go through, people who are born with wombs or socialized women that are welcome. I want to go through the feminine rites of passage through the blood gates. And so we look at women's rights, and it really, the rites of passage in that container are a map of just of self-knowledge and exploration of different stages of development, different aspects of growth, how we're socialized in these different thresholds of our journey of maturing. And the whole time we'll do vocal activation processes, inner alchemy with the voice, and work with writing and our writing process to get that stuff that's inside out. And we'll work with songwriting as a way to have these bundles of song. But I've noticed that women who go through this journey really, they get all kinds of things out of it. A lot of them will unpack their path of giving their bigger gifts in the world, whether they're continue to choose to cultivate song as part of their vocation or not, that just having a space to work on song dedicated to their own journey of the womb becomes this really cool womb incubation for rebirthing themselves in a new way into the world. And so that journey I love. I've been doing that for many years. We're going to be going to Greece in April. For those who want to go to Greece, it's not, they don't have to, but you can do the 9-month journey without going to Greece. But we are going to take a trip to Greece to go to the land of the oracles in Delphi, and to go spend 7 days on the beautiful island of Aigaleus and do some really fun in-person somatic vocal alchemical expression narrating processes as well. It's going to be super fun. So that's one of the journeys that I do that's coming up. And then I do some other short form songwriting courses, muse courses, vocal empowerment classes, but the one that's coming up is this one in October, the voice of my womb, the rose petal path.
That sounds absolutely transformational and amazing. I can't imagine 9 months of really opening up your voice and exploring that inner realm, and also your womb space. Like, this is part of our somatic center, as like my mentors put it, like this space of convergence of all these, you know, muscles, but also all these energies, you know, right in that creative sacral chakra place, and you know, stimulating, opening that up from an energetic perspective. I can imagine just there's an incredible outpouring of creativity and individual personalized creativity that people must experience. That sounds incredible.
Yeah, it's a super juicy, wonderful space. I love it. It's so wonderful.
You also have a new album coming out. Can you tell us about your new album and what it's like?
I have a new album. It's called Weightless. It comes out September 1st. And this is one of my lockdown babies. I started recording it at the end of 2020. I knew I wasn't going to go on tour for a while, so we went back into the studio. And this album is all, it's very lush. It's got a lot of vocals and cello. It's mostly like vocals, guitar, and washing cello. I wanted to make an album that was just a mood of lushness. And so it's coming out. There's some singles that have come out already. And we're having a big album release extravaganza September 16th in Grass Valley. So if you want to come make the trek to Grass Valley and come visit the Yuba River and come to this big immersive theater show that we're putting on, it's going to be super fun. We're going to do an in-person vocal alchemy sanctuary workshop the next day on the 17th. So that'll be an opportunity to come in person and have a 3-hour experience of the voice in some of these creative ways that we've been talking about. So that's all coming up next month.
Oh wow, yeah, that sounds awesome. And that's such a beautiful part. That's kind of the area where you live, right? It's
I'm
like,
currently living in Grass Valley, yeah.
yeah, it's such a really beautiful part of California. I've been up there a number of times, and
Yeah.
yeah, ooh, this sounds all sounds really wonderful. Well, if our listeners would like to connect with you, they'd like to find you. I know your music is on a bunch of different platforms, right?
Yep, it's all over the world. You can find it wherever you listen to music. You can come to my website, templeofthemuse.com, or you can look my art website up, maria-stark.com. You can find me on all the Instagrams and Facebooks of your choosing.
Absolutely wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Do you have any kind of last thoughts or, you know, anything to kind of, you know, leave our listeners with about singing, about voice activation, about relationships, anything that kind of flows into your mind at this moment?
Yeah, I'd say that the voice is our first medicine. Voice is original medicine. And I always want to encourage people to ally with your sound as a way to connect in any moment to that quality that it makes life really juicy, that you have access in any moment. If you're dysregulated or you just went through something really weird, or you can't seem to locate yourself, just take a minute to tone home to yourself and help yourself locate yourself in your body in the moment and reconnect. And as a first medicine, it's my favorite first medicine.
Beautiful. On that note, could you make a sound for us?
Yeah, why don't we just all tone home right now together, taking a deep breath in, breathing out one final tone right to the center.
Beautiful.
Thank you,
Thank
Amy. Thank you,
you.
everyone, for listening.
Yeah, absolutely. Check out Maria's new album and her juicy, incredible offerings. And thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your beautiful expression and such really powerful ideas with everyone today. Thank you again.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Have a wonderful day.
Hello everyone, I'm Amy Takaya and I have an exciting announcement. At the end of September, I will be hosting my first full-length retreat. Somatic Awakening will take place in the San Gabriel Mountains. This 3-day transformational experience will include Hana Somatic Movement, hands-on somatic bodywork by my father William Davis, my cousin Seiji Oshenza, and myself. We will also explore somatic yoga and mudra practice, as well as an end-of-the-day sound healing to deepen your calm and release. Only 9 spaces are available for full-time participants. Day passes will be available for the Saturday activities. Right now, you can get $200 off the full price of the retreat. So, if you're feeling called into freedom and ease of movement, a peaceful, relaxed nervous system, delicious plant-based meals, and a fresh and enlivened way of being, go to freeyoursoma.com and hold your space. Payment plans are available by request, and feel free to reach out to me with questions or comments at freeyoursoma@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening and supporting this self-healing revolution.